Hello, this is the Thinkers 50 podcast and I'm Stuart Craner. Today I'm talking with Dave Ulrich. Dave is a professor of business at the Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan and co-founder of the RBL Group. He has written 15 books covering topics in HR and leadership. Dave, thanks for joining us today. What's amazing is how many books you've written, how prolific you are. What's the theme that links your 15 books, do you think?
You're very kind. Thanks for the acknowledgement. One of the themes that links the books is that nobody reads them. Now, that's probably a bad thing to say. There's really two kind of streams of books that we've done. One is around HR and how do you use HR to deliver value. The other is around leadership and what are the trends in thinking and leadership. If you were to connect those, it's both how do you do things inside of a company, HR, leadership, talent, organization, that create value for the customers, investors, and others outside the company.
What first ignited your interest in HR? Because HR is what you're best known for and associated with. What first ignited your interest in it?
A long time ago, I was interested in how do you build organizations that succeed? And how do you do that in a sustainable way? So I did some time studying issues around change and how do you make change happen. And then what I discovered is a lot of the change work didn't have sustainability. And the sustainability comes from the infrastructure in a firm. It's the staffing, training, compensation, communications. And so my take into HR was how do you meld three circles? One is business strategy, where are we going? The other is change, how do you make things happen? And the other is HR, how do you sustain them? And I've tried to work, I think, at the intersection of those three circles throughout my career.
So your new book, HR Transformation, published by McGraw-Hill, what needs to change in the way HR is organized and why?
Actually, I'd start not with the way HR is organized. When I do seminars, one of the questions I often ask is, what's the biggest challenge you face in your job today? And when I'm working with HR people, a big percent of the time, not 100, but a lot is, they say, gee, I'm really worried about this compensation concern or a staffing issue or retention issue or training issue or building my personal credibility. And what I like to suggest is the challenge is we often look at our activities and what we do. What we need to look at as the challenge is what's the outcome or what we deliver. And so when we think about HR transformation, we like to not start with how do you change the structure, how do you change the HRIS system, but we like to start with what's the outcome and what's the business context in which that outcome occurs. So the tool that we've given people is a really simple one. We say, what's the biggest challenge you face in your job today? A staffing concern, a pay concern, then we suggest use two words, so that my organization moves quicker to market, so that in an economic recession, I can build market share. And when we ask at least two so that's, we go from the activity to the outcome to the business context. And so where I like to start the HR discussion is around the business context. A final example of that, I have the really great privilege of talking with lots of HR people, and when I have a chance, what I love to start with is, start with me about your business. What's happening in the business? What's happening with customers, competitors, products, revenues, and what are you doing strategically? And then we talk about how HR links to those business agendas and helps make them happen.
Is there a sense in that HR can be a kind of internally focused activity?
Quite often. I think often when we say to HR, who are the customers that you serve to an HR group? Again, a preponderance of the time, people will say, oh, it's the employees. We're here to serve the employees. We think we come back and say, true, but incomplete. The customers of an HR group are the customers of a company, people that take money out of their purse or their wallet and give it to the company. And if HR people have that mindset, we then don't want to be the employer of choice, an HR line. We want to be the employer of choice of employees our customers would choose. We don't want to build on your strengths, another popular line in our field. We want to build on strengths that will strengthen others. And that last tag on both of those shifts HR from inside the company to delivering value outside.
Yeah, because you get a lot of CEOs saying that people are their most important asset. But at the same time, HR often feels like a marginal activity in some corporations.
And again, in some corporations, it probably should be because the HR work is focused on the administrative transactions, which have to be done and have to be done well. But when an executive says our people are our most important asset, I love to say to that executive, you now have another phrase. Our people are really our customer's most important asset. Are we building people, talent inside the company that will create value for the customers outside. For example, if we're running a training program, if your customer sat through this training program or observed what you were teaching or was the recipient of what you taught, would they buy more products or services from you? For example, a lot of companies have done value statements, which are a wonderful thing to do. But the real value of values is if you took that value statement to your best customers and you showed it to them and said, are these the values you want us to be good at? And really begin to link the internal work with the external. And then so the customers say, what do we now have to do to make these values real to you? And then say to them, when we do that, will you buy more from us? That the line of sight between the inside HR work and the outside customer expectations is where the ultimate value will be sustained.
Yeah, I mean, do people from an HR background actually get to the top of organizations? Or is it usually people from a finance background, which I suspect?
Actually, it's often people in finance and marketing. And I'm not sure that that's necessarily a criteria. It says the only way you're a good financial person is if you become CEO. Implicitly, it says the only way you're a good HR person is if you leave the function. What I would hope we'd have is HR people who really are business literate. Our research suggests that we call it being a business ally, but it's having economic and business literacy so that when we sit and engage in a discussion with the business leader, we can talk about business terms. We can talk about CAGR, return on net present value. We can talk about the business terms that will help the business be successful.
I think there's a sense, I mean, in HR transformation, you have interesting case studies from Flextronics, Pfizer, Intel. It's a sense it's easy to be great at HR when you're successful. When you're less successful, HR becomes more marginalized.
Actually, it's kind of interesting. We've been having some discussions lately in down markets when we're struggling, in some ways the talent issue becomes even talent organization issues become even more critical because you're under a greater magnifying glass. Sometimes in up markets the rising tide covers ill will and ineffective systems. So our view is actually that and there's an interesting phenomenon happening we've seen right now, and this is a little currency. In a recession, what we've seen in employee engagement surveys is what may be a false positive. A lot of companies are having very high employee engagement survey scores. It's kind of a gratitude effect. I have a job, and we've let go the people who weren't happy, and I'm grateful to have a job. The reason HR really matters more than ever is that if in this downturn you've got employees that have a gratitude effect, I'm happy that I have a job, I'm engaged. What's going to happen when the recession ends and the economy turns back up is that firms that didn't treat their people well through good human resource practices will probably have a slough off in their engagement and talent indices. Memories are longer than recessions. On the other hand, firms that treated their people well will continue to have that increase. So I think in a downturn, while it's seductive to say we don't have to do HR work because memories are longer than recessions, we actually have to do it very, very aggressively. And then in up markets, when the markets are good, employees have choice, they're volunteers, because they can move elsewhere, we also have to build good human resource systems to maintain and keep our people.
Because when it comes to employee engagement, I mean, it's amazing how low the figures are when people are asked, are they fully engaged when they go to work? I think it's about 20% of people say they're fully engaged at work. That must be...
Actually, we'd like to make a distinction, if I could. I think the HR field has gone through two phases in talent field and now moving to a third. One is competence. Do employees have the skills to do the job? Do they have the brain power to do it? Second is engagement. Do we have their hands and their feet? And I think often we have hands and feet. People show up. But the engagement term you just referred to is what we call contribution because it's a little different. Employees may be there, but they may not be fully engaged. They may not be fully participating. We've been doing quite a bit of work lately around how do you build an organization that captures not just your brains, your hands and your feet, but your heart and your soul. And when you want to create an organization that captures that, we've called that building abundance and building a sense of meaning. And the employee value proposition of the future will not just be around terms and conditions of work, but about meaning and abundance at work. And when you can shape that in the organization, we think then not just the engagement scores goes up with your hands and your feet, but your heart and your soul. And that's the direction where we think the employee and talent proposition will be headed.
So it's the HR department's job to create meaning in the organization?
I think it's the HR department's job. by the way, I feel so bold saying this is what I think. I'm not sure I'm right, but I'll give you a point of view. I think it's the HR department's job to be the architect of meaning. I think line managers are the owners. When we build a house with an architect, the architect gives us a blueprint, gives us a framework, gives us models, gives us ideas. Ultimately, as the owner of the house, we make the final decision. I think line managers are ultimately accountable and responsible for that sense of meaning among their employees.
In HR transformation, you talk about four phases. And the first phase is business context. The second phase is the outcomes. The third phase is HR redesign. And the fourth phase is HR accountability. Could you talk us through how those phases work?
Sure. Let's assume that for whatever reason, a chief HR officer wants to transform his or her HR department. I think you begin by answering the question why. And let's assume that you're doing a presentation to an executive committee seeking for approval. The first few slides, if you were using PowerPoint, would be, here's the business context that is driving the rationale for transformation. Here's why we're doing it. Markets are changing. Shareholder value is falling on the intangible side. We're getting less customer revenue from targeted customers, employee productivity, retention. We got the why. We got the rationale. The second set of slides, which is phase two, is what is it we're going to deliver? What's the outcome if we do this transformation well? And the outcome is not an activity, but a set of what we call capabilities. A capability represents what the organization is good at doing. Are we good at moving quickly to markets? Are we good at innovation? Are we good at customer service? Are we good at managing costs? HR's transformation starts with answering why we're doing it. It then moves to what it is we will get because we do it. Phase three is how we go about it. And again, this is where most people start, but I think it's good to go back into the first two. There's how number one, how do we change the HR function, our strategy, our structure? How do we build the function? HRIS systems help, our delivery system helps. How number two is how do we align, integrate, and innovate our HR practices, our people, performance, communication, organization practices. How number three is how do we upgrade our HR professionals? What skills and knowledge do they need to be successful? Great deal of work in HR transformation, making sure that our structure, our practices, and our people are connected to each other. And then phase number four, who's accountable for this work? What's the role of the HR person? What's the role of the line manager? What's the role of the employee? What's the role of the outside advisor? So those four phases give us, if you will, a blueprint or a roadmap for how to go about doing HR transformation.
Are you optimistic that there's an appetite for change within the HR world?
Anybody who knows me knows that I have a big appetite. Is there an appetite for change? I think the appetite for change is greater than the capacity. And I think sometimes HR people, I don't know many HR people that wake up in the morning and say, gee, I want to go to work today and not accomplish anything. Most of the HR people and business people I work with wake up and say, I want this to be a great day. I want to deliver something of value. The challenge is how do we frame their lives and their work so that that value is created. So the other thing that I've said before and I feel very strongly about is a 20-60-20 rule. And you can quibble with me with the numbers. 20% of HR people are doing the kind of things we talk about. The bar has been raised and they're leaping over it. 20% never will. And when I read articles that say, I hate HR, my HR people are terrible, I can find 20% in HR that just aren't very good. And they probably may never get there. And then 60% are in the middle. I think sometimes I focus sometimes on the top 20%. Critics of the function focus on the bottom 20%. I wish we'd all focus on the middle 60 and move them to the top 20. And so I'm an optimist. I think the 60% are moving in the right direction. I think there'll be a percent, I don't know if it's 15 or 20, who won't move. And if that's where somebody chooses to focus, they'll find it. I think the 20% are already there. We need to highlight them. We need to make them iconic and exemplars. But it's the 60% that I feel good about it. At places like CIPD, they're doing wonderful work building models for HR. Sherman, the United States. Our firm, the RBL Group. I think we've done work with that middle 60%, helping them learn how to move into that top 20%.
Have you ever been tempted to work in the corporate world as an HR director? I know you're on the board of directors of Herman Miller.
I everybody has strengths and weaknesses. I'm not sure how good I'd be long-term in the company, to be honest. I think one of the things I enjoy doing, it's a strength, and I'm not sure it's value to everybody, but I like going into a company and diagnosing a problem. The other luck I have is I have a very close friend who says, Dave, you've never worked in a company. How can you do good HR work? And my comment back sometimes to my friends is, you've worked in one company. How can you share experience? And so I have the luxury in a given year of probably being in 20 or 30 companies in some detail and trying almost like a large hummingbird to share ideas and knowledge from one site to the other. And that's what I enjoy. At this point in my career, I would never say never, but I think I have a job that I enjoy and feel enormously privileged to do, and hope that I can keep doing it for a few more years.
So who influences your thinking? Which other thinkers in the HR field?
Well, I was going to say the first person is my wife, who is much smarter and more talented. We're doing a book on that issue of building abundance and building meaning in organizations. So that'll be one of our next books. In the HR field, there are some people I just relish and I would pay money to listen to. And the minute I start, I'm going to leave off dear colleagues, but I will say C.K. Prahalad has a knack for defining strategy and turning strategy into results. He's a dear colleague and a gifted thinker. Steve Kerr, who's been chief learning officer at GE and Goldman Sachs, has been instrumental in my career for 30 years. I took a course from him probably 25 years ago, and just my tongue was hanging out with wisdom. I mean, that's a bad metaphor, but he captured my imagination, and I've been privileged to work with him for a long time. Linda Groton in the UK, I consider a dear and close friend whose ideas I love, and when I read her work, I learn from it. Jeff Pfeffer at Stanford in the United States has great ideas that continually kind of integrate and push the boundaries of rigorous and good thinking. Bob Eichinger, Jack Fitzhenz, Ed Lawler, whose work has been iconic in this field and whom I consider to be, and have said, my distant mentor, and hopefully someday I can have an impact in the field like he has had. So those are some of the people in the academic kind of place whose ideas I love, and the list in industry is just too long. I have the real privilege of working with incredible colleagues at our firm, the RBL Group, and one of the books I wrote about 10, 15 years ago was HR Champions, and I co-authored it. And when I finished, it was a good experience, but I've decided that every book I've written, I've actually written about 20 books now, and every book I've written, I've co-authored, because I get to work with people I adore. I've co-authored with Steve Kerr, I've co-authored with Ed Lawler, with Jack Fitzhenz, Bob Eichinger, and when I co-author with people, I get into their heads, and I'm sure I steal far more than I put back.
Dave Ulrich, co-author of HR Transformation, thank you very much.
You're very kind, sir. Thanks for your time.